This is an ABC podcast.
Hobart's Sue Neill-Fraser. Is she a charismatic murderer or a victim of a miscarriage of justice?
I'm 100% sure that she is a victim of a miscarriage of justice. And I don't understand why the Supreme Court in this most recent appeal didn't enable her to have a retrial, where a lot of the issues that have been exposed over the past 12, 13 years could have been re-examined by the court.
I don't think there's been a miscarriage of justice. The extensive evidence at the original trial, then her appeal to the appeal court, and then of course we've had this latest appeal process, and the issues that the support group and the defence team keep raising have been discounted.
Hello, Damien Carrick with you. Welcome to the Law Report. Last week, in a 2-1 majority decision, Tasmania's Court of Criminal Appeal dismissed a case brought by convicted murderer Sue Neill-Fraser. Her case has transfixed and polarised Hobart ever since the disappearance of her de facto partner Bob Chappell from a yacht on Australia Day back in 2009. Journalist Loretta Loberger has followed the case closely for 13 years, first for the Launceston Examiner, then the Hobart Mercury, and in recent years for ABC Tasmania.
It's quite unusual, given the fact that no murder weapon's been found. It took place on a yacht, fairly well-to-do people. So it's just a bit of an unusual case, and I think that sort of captured the imagination of a lot of people in Hobart.
So who is Sue Neill-Fraser? She's now 67 years old.
Well, back in 2009, she was 55 years old. She had lived with Bob Chappell. I think their relationship had been about 18 years at that time. They'd bought a yacht together and had sailed it down to Tasmania from Queensland.
The yacht in question, it's called the Four Winds, and it was moored at Sandy Bay, which is a high-income area of Hobart, which many people will know is where the Rest Point Hotel and Casino is located. The couple had been out for a sail, I think, with relatives on the morning of Australia Day 2009, and then in the afternoon, I think Sue Neill-Fraser rowed a dinghy back to land, and Bob stayed on board, she says, to kind of play with it, to kind of tinker with the engine. What happened the next morning?
That's right. So the next morning, Tasmania police say that they had reports of a yacht taking on water.
So they boarded the sinking yacht and they found it empty and abandoned and taking on water.
Yes, and that it had been sabotaged as well. Police realised that Bob Chappell wasn't on board the yacht and that he was missing. It took some time for any charges to be laid. Police had questioned Neill-Fraser, but it was some months later that she was charged with Mr. Chappell's murder.
So in this murder prosecution, there's no body because Bob Chappell has disappeared. We assume his body is at the bottom of the Derwent River. So it's a circumstantial case against Sue Neill-Fraser, and the big plank of the evidence against Sue Neill-Fraser is that it would appear that she told two lies to police. What were those two lies?
She told police that she'd been at Bunnings on the afternoon. She said that she'd been at Bunnings quite late that day.
After she'd rowed the dinghy back onto the mainland.
That's right, and that it was getting dark when she left Bunnings because she had to drive home to West Hobart with the headlights on her car. Remembering that this was January, it's quite light until late at that time of year. Also, being a public holiday, when police looked into this, they realised that the Bunnings store in Hobart's northern suburbs had actually closed at 6 o'clock that evening, when it still would have been broad daylight.
And there was no CCTV footage to support her assertion that she had spent the afternoon in Bunnings.
The police said that they'd gone through the CCTV footage for that day at Bunnings and didn't find her on that footage at all. Neill-Fraser had also told police that she spent that night at home. Then a photograph emerged from a CCTV camera at an ATM on Sandy Bay Road that showed her car going to the area where the Four Winds was moored.
So they were two major planks of the circumstantial case against her. And she always said that she maintained that, look, she was either confused and traumatised in terms of confused about the Bunnings. And then she later admitted that, yes, she did go down at night to look out over the water because she was a bit worried about Bob. They were her explanations for those two discrepancies. At a 2010 trial, she was actually found guilty by a jury. I think after about 18 hours of deliberation, she was found guilty of murder, wasn't she?
That's right, yeah. And it has to be a unanimous verdict for murder.
And she was sentenced to 26 years jail.
She appealed in 2012 against her sentence and conviction. The appeal against conviction was dismissed at that appeal, but her appeal against sentence was upheld and it was reduced to 23 years.
The defence argument at trial was that there was DNA evidence of a young woman which had been found on the deck of the yacht, a young, vulnerable, homeless girl, well, girl at the time, 15 years of age at the time back in 2009. Her name was Megan Bass. What was the defence argument about that and what was the prosecution argument in response?
Yeah, so I might start with the prosecution. They argued that that DNA essentially was a red herring and that the deposit could have got onto the deck of the yacht by way of secondary transfer, so somebody walking it on from the sole of their shoe. The defence argued that the prosecution was wrong to say that it was a red herring, and they made a bit of a deal out of that DNA being there and saying that it could support a hypothesis that somebody else was involved in the murder of Mr. Chappell and that was consistent with Sir Neil Fraser's innocence.
The prosecution argued that, look, no, the DNA could have gotten there after the disappearance of Bob Chappell when the yacht was relocated to an area in North Hobart. So it wasn't evidence that she was there on the night of the disappearance or the murder.
No, I think there were some days between the murder and when the sample was taken from the yacht, and it was moved first to Constitution Dock in Hobart, and then it was taken to a place called Clean Lift Marine in Goodwood in Hobart's northern suburbs.
So she's found guilty by a jury in 2010. There are appeal processes which are unsuccessful. Sure, her sentence is reduced from 26 years to 23 years. But there is a huge disquiet among many Tasmanians. And there's a big campaign. There are billboards around the city. There's a vigil. There are kind of ongoing vigils and demonstrations. And Sir Neil Fraser was the catalyst for a change in the law in 2015.
Yes, there was a lot of pressure put on the state government at the time to allow convicted people the right to a second or subsequent appeal. So under the rules before that, anyone who's convicted of a crime in Tasmania had an automatic right of appeal to the Court of Criminal Appeal, but that was the only chance that they had in the state courts. So this new law, when it came in 2015, it enabled convicted people the right to a second or subsequent appeal if they could show that they had fresh and compelling evidence that demonstrated there had been a substantial miscarriage of justice. So what Sue Neill Fraser had to do was to convince a single judge that she had a reasonable case to present to the Court of Criminal Appeal under these new laws. That was granted in 2019. And then her appeal on the grounds of fresh and compelling evidence could proceed before the full bench.
And that fresh and compelling evidence, that centred around that young woman, now adult woman, Megan Bass. What was that evidence? Because the evidence of Megan Bass has gone back and forwards like a pendulum over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah. So at the original trial, Megan Bass said she had no memory of ever being on board the Four Winds. Then later, She has made statements both inside and outside court saying that she was there on the night that Mr. Chappell was killed and that she knew who it was or was there when it happened, and that Sue Neill-Fraser wasn't on board the yacht at the time. She gave evidence during the appeal hearing in March. She told the court a version of this story that she'd been on board while the murder happened and that Sue Neill-Fraser wasn't there. But under cross-examination, she recanted the story, and her Neill-Fraser's lawyers ended up abandoning Megan Vass's evidence. Their appeal still hinged on her DNA, but what they were relying on instead was some evidence from Victoria Police forensics expert Maxwell Jones about how the DNA deposit could have got on board the Four Winds.
The lawyers for Sue Neill-Fraser went into this appeal hearing earlier this year with two planks to their evidence. One, the evidence of Megan Vass saying, yes, yes, I was there. Then she then spectacularly recants on the second day of giving evidence, saying, no, 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 I wasn't there. I think she even uses the words, I was kind of hounded into giving this evidence. And so they are forced to abandon that plank of the appeal evidence and rely just on the forensic evidence, saying it's very unlikely that her evidence could have been transplanted onto the boat or onto the deck of the boat from the sole of a foot of, say, a policeman who had kind of picked up Megan Vass's DNA from some other place.
And in her judgment, Justice Helen Wood said that Mr. Jones's evidence, she didn't think it was fresh and compelling, but also it didn't rule out secondary transfer, although it did say it was unlikely and would need certain circumstances to occur, but also that it may not have helped the defence because he also said that the DNA could have got on board after the murder.
So it could have been that she got onto the boat at a later point.
That's right.
ABC journalist Loretta Loberger, who was in court last March when witness Megan Vass testified that she was on the Four Winds on the night of Bob Chappell's disappearance before changing her evidence the following day. Why did Megan Vass do this? You are about to hear two possible explanations. One, that she felt pressured by supporters of Sue Neill-Fraser to give evidence that would exonerate the convicted murderer. The other theory is that Megan Vass backflipped because she feared revenge from people she had named in court as being with her on the yacht.
You're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio National with Damien Carrick. Available anywhere, anytime, via the ABC Listen app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Retired Detective Inspector Peter Powell led the investigation into Bob Chappell's death. He believes the case against Sue Neill-Fraser was and remains very solid.
No, I don't think there's been a miscarriage of justice. The extensive evidence at the original trial, then her appeal to the appeal court. She did try to lodge an appeal with the High Court, which was rejected. And then, of course, we've had this latest appeal process. And to be honest, the issues that the support group and the defence team keep raising, in my view, have been discounted.
What do you make of the recent decision of the Tasmanian Court of Criminal Appeal, which upheld her conviction 2-1?
Well, I think they've got it right. And my thoughts about it are that the judges have gone through the whole evidence in very fine detail, and particularly the senior judge, Justice Helen Wood, and she's recounted all the evidence from way back at the first trial. And I know the issues about Megan Vass seem to be the biggest problem, but you know, I've said all along that I do believe that if it wasn't a transfer onto the yacht, Megan Vass's DNA, there's every possibility that her DNA got on that yacht whilst it was out at Clean Lift at Jet Parade, because she admits that she was associated with some young criminal offenders in that area at the time. And we know there had been break-ins at the boatyard.
You're talking there, Peter Powell, about the two planks of evidence that were brought to the Court of Appeal for this latest proceeding under the 2015 miscarriage of justice legislation about fresh and compelling evidence. And there was the fresh and compelling evidence about Megan Vass, a young, erratic, vulnerable woman who has changed her version of events many, many times over the year. Her DNA was found on the deck of the Four Winds yacht. She said at trial, "I wasn't on the boat. I was never on the boat." Then she told in subsequent years a number of media outlets that she was on the boat. And then she came to the Court of Appeal in March this year and said, yes, I was on the boat. And then on the second day of proceedings, she spectacularly recanted and said, no, I take that back. I wasn't on the boat.
Well, I think you're right in saying that she was a very vulnerable young girl. And I think even at this stage, she's probably someone who's got some issues. But my view of the whole thing is that Megan Vass herself has indicated that she was coerced into making some of these statements. And, of course, when the pressure came on at this latest appeal, she had to admit that she'd made this story up.
What about the other plank of the fresh and compelling evidence, the evidence of DNA expert Max Jones, which supporters of Sunil Fraser say undermine the prosecution's explanation of how Megan Vass's DNA got on the yacht? It couldn't have arrived on the boat via a secondary transfer. In other words, on the shoe of a second party. At some point, she had to have been on that yacht.
Well, there's two things about that, and I've read, obviously, the court's judgment, and I've read the evidence that Max Jones gave. And even Max Jones makes this concession that it's a possibility that it was a transfer. And on top of that, I go back to my own views about how it may have got on. That if she was ever on the deck of that boat, it may well have been when she's been with some young people that have been committing burglaries at the boatyard.
One of the criticisms by supporters of Sunil Fraser is that the investigating team had tunnel vision and they focused exclusively on Sunil Fraser and ignored other possible suspects.
I don't agree with that at all. I know that my team spent 8 months before Neil Fraser was charged. I know that we had daily meetings that I was a party to where we discussed all sorts of possible scenarios, including whether Mr. Chappell had committed suicide or gone missing of his own accord or accidental death. And we certainly looked at all those possibilities. And we threw these ideas around as a team all the time. But at the end of the day, we kept coming back to the fact that all the evidence about Neil Fraser lying to the police about having gone down to the yacht that evening, lying about some other conversations that she'd obviously had with people. And when people say about having no motive, the motive probably was that her relationship with Bob was not what she claims it to be. And she was going to inherit most of his estate rather than have to share it if she'd left him. There's conversations about the crew that sailed the yacht down from Queensland with her, where she told them that, her relationship with Bob was over, and the broker that sold them the vessel. The knowledge that someone on that vessel had to have intimate knowledge where the seacock was that was cut to help try and sink the yacht, disable the bilge alarm system. So my view of that is, if you accepted that some young people had got on the yacht and, been disturbed by Mr. Chappell and they did kill him, you wouldn't think they'd even bother to try and sink the yacht. You'd think they'd be in a panic and get off as quickly as they could.
How do you respond to calls for a commission of inquiry or a parliamentary inquiry into this case?
I think that all the issues have been well and truly raked over for a long, long time. I get it that the family don't seem to want to accept that Neil Fraser's guilty and they've got this support group. But I don't see where it's going, because we'll have the same issues all over again. And I guess one of the disappointing things is that some people in the support group, I don't know how much intimate knowledge they have about all the evidence, but they don't seem to want to acknowledge any evidence that points to Neil Fraser's guilt.
It seems everyone in Tasmania holds a firm opinion about the guilt or innocence of Sunil Fraser. Lara Giddings was the Premier of Tasmania from 2011 to 2014 and was also State Attorney General from 2008 to 2010. She believes Sue Neill-Fraser is innocent.
I'm 100% sure that she is a victim of a miscarriage of justice, and I don't understand why the Supreme Court in this most recent appeal didn't enable her to have a retrial where a lot of the issues that have been exposed over the past 12, 13 years could have been re-examined by the court. Unfortunately, when you go through a process of appeal after appeal after appeal, it becomes very narrow as to the elements that you're appealing on. And the full case, the full gambit of issues that have arisen over those years cannot be examined by the court. So even though she's just recently lost yet another appeal, for those of us who have been watching this case very closely for quite some time, we're quite frustrated by the fact that the court itself did not have a number of issues before it for which it needed to consider in order to be able to make a determination on a retrial or an acquittal.
So essentially, it was, as you would see it, looking at a narrow piece of evidence and wasn't looking at the bigger picture. That's the way you would see it.
Oh, absolutely. And in the end, the appeal looked at just one very narrow piece of evidence, which regarded the DNA on board the boat that belonged to Megan Vass and how that DNA got on board the boat. And two of the three judges ended up siding with the DPP's version of events, that it could well have been that that DNA was transferred onto the boat out at Goodwood. Now, that very much goes against the evidence of Megan Vass herself. But then, of course, Megan Vass, for various issues, ended up reverting back and changing her evidence in the court. And from a court perspective, once you have a witness change their evidence, and quite substantially in her case, a total backflip, that witness becomes unbelievable in the eyes of the law. And yet I think in the eyes of the people, if you actually understood what was going on for Megan and the environment in which Megan Vass lives and must continue to live in, that it's a very frightening prospect for her to open up and actually be honest and truthful about what happened that night on board the Four Winds. And she's gathered the courage to do that once when she went on to 60 Minutes. She put together an affidavit saying that she was there, that it was not Sue Neill-Fraser who murdered Bob Chappell. And on day one of the appeal, she was very forthright in her evidence as to what happened that night, who was on board the Four Winds, and how it was that Bob Chappell ended up dead. But because there was no immunity from prosecution sought to protect her, because there was no suppression of the names that she gave to the court as being other people involved that night, she ended up being a very vulnerable witness on day two of that appeal. And that's why she backflipped. But a couple of days after her court appearance, she spoke publicly again about the fact that nobody wants to know the truth, that that she was there, that she panicked in the court. Now, all of these elements she has said yet again on the public record, but because of our very strict legal system, none of that counts for anything. Her admissions count for nothing.
How can a court take that into account? Backflip, spectacular swings of the pendulum over time since her initial evidence at the trial back in 2010, then those statements to various media organisations, and then the backflip in the court in March this year.
Well, again, we need to understand that Megan Vass is a very vulnerable person. And her direct quote that she gave to Andrew Urban in his wrongful convictions report just days after the event in March of this year in the court, she said, "I didn't want the names out in public. I panicked and was so scared. It was all I could think of to do." That is that she backflipped at that point. The issue for her was that she had named up someone and she felt her life was in danger. She said that.
Lara Giddings, Tasmania's a small place and everyone seems to know everyone else. What's your connection to Sue Neill Fraser and her family?
My mother was friends with Sue's mother, Helen Neill Fraser, and when Sue ended up being interviewed and then arrested by the police, Helen rang my mother, who had been a previous probation officer and welfare officer indeed within the prison itself, to say, what happens? What's going to happen to my daughter? What's the processes? Can you help me through this? So my mother assisted Helen through the process, and my father, who happened to be a retired magistrate from Papua New Guinea, the two of them sat in the court for the original trial to support Helen Neill Fraser, and they were appalled by what they saw during that trial. For me as Attorney General at that time, I was interested in the case, obviously. I got hounded every weekend by my parents, who would ask me, what are you doing about it? And had to assure them that there was nothing as an Attorney General I could do in interfering in a process that was underway, a process of appeals that took some years to work their way through up to the High Court. So it would have been inappropriate for me to intervene. But I did follow that case extremely closely, and one of the shackles I no longer have to bear, now I'm no longer a Member of Parliament, is that concern of the separation of powers between the judiciary and Parliament as well. So I now feel free to speak out on a case that I have had concerns about very early in the piece. So the only way we can deal with this really is to establish a Criminal Cases Review Commission that exists in the UK, New Zealand, Norway. I believe Canada's about to get one too, because miscarriages of justice happen everywhere. But a Criminal Cases Review Commission allows for cases like Sue Neill Fraser's to be re-examined down the track, to call in all the evidence that should have been, could have been made possible at the time, can interview witnesses, can interview investigating officers, etc., and come up with a conclusion as to whether there has been a miscarriage of justice or not, without being confined to evidence law, to hearsay evidence not being applicable or able to be presented, you know, those sorts of things. That's what we need in Australia.
Lara Giddings, a former Premier of Tasmania and also former State Attorney General, and retired Detective Peter Powell don't appear to agree on much. But on the question of whether Tasmania should have a criminal review commission, they do share some common ground.
I wouldn't have any objection to that. I mean, that's something that I guess governments can look at. And I'm aware of those commissions, you know, they have in other countries. I don't see any real problem with that, because you would think that they would look at all the issues. And it's not just the narrow things that can be brought up at an appeal. I'd still be confident that our case in relation to Neill Fraser is pretty solid.
Retired Detective Inspector Peter Powell, who was in charge of the investigation into Bob Chappell's murder. Lawyers for Sue Neill Fraser are considering the Tasmanian Court of Criminal Appeals 2-1 decision and whether they might seek leave to appeal to the High Court. That's the Law Report for this week. A big thank you to producer Christina Kukolia and also to sound engineer Christina Miltiadu. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more law.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.